This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Do you want to go around and do an introduction?
I thought maybe everyone can, not that will take us a while to remember. I'm Tom Jacobson. This is Timur Bekmambetov, as you all know. Why don't you go around and tell us who you all are and who you're here with.
Let's start
to the left of Jack.
Hello, my name is Silas. I write for Coming Soon .net in the U.S.
Hi, you.
Vincent, I write for UGO.
Eric Walkowski, I write for JoeBlog.com. I'm from New York.
Joe UCP, I'm writing online generics for Fox UK.
I'll go with Steve Weintraub, Collider.
I'm Peter Soretta from SlashHome.com.
From IGN.
I'm Chris Egerton from Bloody Disgusting in Los Angeles.
And then Stefano Coccia from Movie Player Magazine, Italy.
Great. Well, welcome,
great
everybody.
Team.
Yeah, very exciting. We're honored that you came all this way to Moscow. It's a long way to come. For
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're glad the weather's clear for you. Afterwards, we'll go out and we'll point out some of the sites because.
I think it'll be clear in a few hours.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for us, because half of the day will be rainy.
Yeah, that's okay. We're shooting the day out. We were sort of nervous because we had the last 2 days off. And of course, it was perfectly clear the last 2 days. And then we woke up this morning, it was raining. But we're shooting outside today. But we're going to get our day's work. So.
Well, speaking of days off, obviously you had the wildfires shut down production. Can you talk about how long the production was shut down? And did it change the film at all? Did you have to cut sequences at all, anything like that?
We were shut down for 3 weeks, and no, we didn't. We were able to scramble and make do. Movies are always involved in scrambling and curveballs, and just gradually overtook us. It was sort of unbelievable. This fire started, and we were just here working, and all of a sudden one day we were shooting on Red Square, which was amazing. And you know, one morning we went out, and in the distance it was hazy. And so that's sort of hazy. And then it just got worse and worse. And like the rest of the world, or certainly Muscovites, we couldn't believe how bad it got. And then one day, it got so bad that you couldn't see 100 yards down the street. And then it started getting into the hotel. Smoke was in the corridors of the hotels, and it was on stage, and you could literally see it. Even though our stage was air-conditioned, you could see it in the sets. And it wasn't the cameraman putting smoke in. It was the country on fire. And so we couldn't film. You literally couldn't see. It was blocking off, and especially in 3D, which we'll talk about a lot, which is 3D is all about depth, all about sort of an immersive experience. And when there's fog and stuff like that, it makes it very flat in the background, so it's really bad for the movie. So we made a decision, and it was to shut down. And the studio was very supportive. And it's actually a so-called act of God. And we scrambled really quickly, and within 3 days, flew everybody out of town. And I just watched it from afar, because no one really knew. They didn't really know how to fight the fires.
Yeah. Still, even now, government taking credit that they conquered the problem, but in reality, it just rain.
Yeah.
It just...
But it's like a storyline, because in general, especially UK filmmaker always make film bad about Russian people always drug dealer or gangster, very dark side of the story always. But how about this story? Is because you're involved in it more.
Russians are great. This time, no, it's a story about the aliens invasion, and from the beginning, in the aliens, it's a metaphor for the foreigners. And from the beginning of the movie, American boys, they feel themselves like aliens here, and they feel like Russians are aliens, and there's misunderstanding, miscommunication. And then when the real aliens appear, then they together they have to fight to survive.
It's not like a cliche of the Russian
Yes, it's not, because Russian actors, they're Russian famous actors involved, and they're very creative, and they will create very sympathetic characters.
Very heroic, as very a matter heroic. Of fact. Our young characters who come to Moscow, that's a very exotic place. They come for different reasons. Two young American guys, Emil Hirsch and Max Minghella, they're here for a business reason. But it's like Timur said, right at the beginning of the movie, they get cheated. They're here to launch a website, and they think they have investors, but they're young guys out in the big bad world, and that doesn't go well. And then they meet these two young women, Olivia Thirlby and Rachel Taylor, who are here traveling, and then the world ends, like right away. They meet at a club, they think they're making friends, and then it's a bad night, and then they're lost and alone in this exotic city, where all the signs are in Cyrillic. There's almost no one around. And that's one of the reasons we came to Moscow, is as a location. It's very powerful. It's beautiful. It's got scope and scale. And people haven't seen it.
An energy. The city has an energy, which is important. It means people and the process. It has an energy. It's quite different from everybody knows in Los Angeles, the process and everything, but it has an energy. People have an energy.
So do you feel particularly involved by the city? Because also in Nationale d'Azur, in the Nightwatch, the locations are so strong, so good for the story you wanted to tell. It's like a following of this poetic, say.
Yes. It's another director, and I cannot force him.
Of course,
and I cannot. But the city, itself,
yeah.
Drives him the same direction.
It's quite an interesting city, and it's quite—it's something that we haven't seen in an American film before. So I wonder if that's part of the attraction, and how it's been to shoot it in 3D, which is probably a side of the city that we've never seen before, in a way that we've never seen it before.
Yeah, the Red Square in 3D.
We're using 3D. 3D, we think, is important to the movie, and it was an important decision and something we're very excited about. We're shooting it in 3D. It's not been converted. It's organically in 3D. And we're using 3D as a story element in terms of an immersive quality to really put you in the place. And Moscow is very photogenic, and our director, Chris Gorak, when he came here, it was very important to him to find locations and to capture this city that felt like you were really embedded in it, but also had scale and scope, and of course we shoot some of the iconic locations like Red Square, but certain other places that you might not know as a foreigner and as a tourist, but look very unique to Moscow. You might not know, I know that building, but it is.
It was very interesting because he found very unusual angles, because he has a fresh eye, because all Russian directors, we are shooting the same streets, the same things, but he has a fresh eye, and he found very interesting, very cool locations and angles and characters.
I'm curious if you mentioned 3D, are you guys using the Red cameras or the Cameron Bay system?
We're not, neither. We're using all the different systems. There's the 3D rig, and then there's the actual digital camera. It's all digital because it has to be captured digitally, and then it depends on which camera you use in the rig. We're using a rig called Element Technica, which is, the rig is what puts two kits. So all 3D systems are two cameras, done like this, because they represent the two eyes, the left eye and the right eye. Pay system does this the same way. The system we're using, we just tested a bunch and had to do with availability. The decision our cameraman made is a system called Element Technique, as I said, through Panavision. The cameras are Sony F35 digital cameras, which are their state-of-the-art. They're about a year or two old. We have two of those rigs and two called P1 rigs, which is another camera, a smaller camera, lightweight camera that we can use for Steadicam. You'll see when you come to the set, it's fascinating. It's a huge, complicated system. The camera looks like a transformer because it weighs about 200 pounds and it's slave to
with the hundreds wires and cables, and difficult to imagine.
Yeah, and you hear from people shooting in 3D that it impacts the production. It takes more time to shoot, have a larger crew, which has certainly been our case, but it's gone great. And we're trying to shoot it as it pretend in terms of the production time, the scheduling amount of setups, and the outrageous to try and pretend it's not 3D in terms of the amount of work we get, but you have to pay attention to it, and you compose differently, and you think about cutting differently, and you think about where you place your actors in the scenes, you place them in order to get the scale and the scope, and a lot of it is just to put us in the action, to make the frame interesting.
How has Chris been exploiting it to kind of give the movie a visual sort of buzz? What's his technique been?
There's two sides to it. One is a subtler side, which is what we would call immersive, to put yourself in the environment, to have someone, if there's a scene, as we said, that's shot on Red Square, where, and it's empty, completely empty, where our two guys, it's after the invasion, and the city's been depopulated, and they only see one or two people as they go, so it's very spooky. And they're lost, and they don't know. And they find they see a police car, which is stranded in the middle of Red Square, right smack in the middle, between Lynn's tomb on one side. You'll see this when you take your tour, and the Goom department store, which is this beautiful department store. And they think there might be something of value in the police car, like a map or flares or emergency. So they run out to it. So one of the ways that you use 3D is if you're shooting in 3D and you're shooting them like hiding behind the police car, and you have this expansive distance behind you with all of Red Square in between you and St. Basil's Cathedral, you really feel like you're there. So part of it's just that framing shots, that, and then part of it is there's a huge action component. The movie's an action thriller, so those scenes are very tense where you're in 3D, and then there's a visual effects side to the movie where our characters interact, usually not the good effect for them, with the invaders, and those effects in 3D will be amazing. How they come in camera.
Chris, because as far as I know, he's only really has the one credit.
And it's about smoke.
Right.
About
exactly.
Smoke, and it's right exactly what's happened with us.
And it's a small film. This is obviously much bigger scale. Can you talk about how he came aboard?
Yeah, we had a terrific script. Timur and I had partnered on it. It set it in Moscow. We were very excited about it. The studio was excited about it. And we were at that point in a project's life. Let's hire a director. And met a lot of people and just loved what Chris had to say on a lot of reasons. Chris is also a writer. He wrote his own script that he directed. He had very smart things to say about the story and the characters. His movie is really grounded in reality. It's scary. It also had scale in a funny way for a little movie. And that combination of story sense, character reality.
And he's a production designer.
Right.
Yeah, he comes from a visual background. So his sense of being able to bring that to telling a visual story, we're very excited to have him. He's doing a fantastic job. We think he's going to have a terrific career and deserves it.
Because of Sleedy's, are many American stuff come through? Crew is Sleedy's a very special technique, so many American people. What is like Russian movies? How many percentage at the moment? The crew?
30%
maybe?
Well, no, American. I would say it's 30% American, 70% Russian.
Yeah.
More Russian crew than American crew. You're right, the technology of 3D is so new, and really right now limited for big movies to the Hollywood companies, but it's going to grow fast. It's going to grow here, it's going to grow. And because the decision was made pretty quickly, pretty much the entire camera crew and the digital pipeline crew came from the States, and a couple people that went with that. And the rest of the crew is Moscow. Huge film industry. And that's been fun, the two crews interacting. And a lot don't speak English. We have interpreters. A lot do.
I'm curious. With oftentimes when a film gets greenlit, everything happens. You're preparing for years, and all of a sudden everything happens so fast.
Yeah.
With the 6 weeks you guys were shut down because of the fires, was it 3 weeks?
3 weeks.
Three weeks that you guys were shut down. What were you guys doing in that time? I mean, obviously that's a huge advantage in the middle of a shoot to just take a pause. So did you guys use that time to refine storyboards, to go through things, or was it sort of just we have it all, we're just relaxing a little bit.
There's no relaxing.
No relaxing. And first of all, it was a big question, what will happen in Moscow, because nobody knew at that time. It will be either like more fires or it will stop. That's why it was very it's unknown what will happen. Everyone was waiting.
Right, so we were planning during that time, what if we can't get back to Moscow? What if we have to go somewhere else? What if we have to change the schedule to go inside instead of outside? What, you know, now we're pushed 3 weeks further back into the seasons, and winter comes pretty fast here. So so we did use the opportunity to keep prepping. We tried to find a silver lining. And also, we didn't know exactly what we were prepping. So luckily, fires calmed down. We were able to get back here. But I think we were able to prepare some of the... There's a lot of action in the movie. There's an action sequences on this movie are interactive with the visual effects. Those have to be planned pretty carefully with animatics and previs and storyboards and which scenes, you know, which shots are going to have effects in them, how many of them. So we were able to do a little more work on that.
Can you talk a little bit about the aliens?
Yeah, one of the and Kimo can talk about this. One, I mean, there's a couple unique things about this movie. We think.
I was wondering what that. What is that?
I don't know. It's a risotto. The cheese, burrata with burrata cheese. I think it's great.
Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, food's important.
Now we're discussing aliens. What?
Yeah. But one of the unique things about how we designed the aliens and the science of the movie is we wanted to try and make, just like the characters' experience, we wanted to try and make the aliens and the science of the movie as grounded as possible. And our alien creatures, there's some mystery to them, and our characters along the way are trying to figure out what happened, what's the danger, and they're based in electricity. They're creatures of electricity and electromagnetism. But the characters, we are the characters, the audience is the characters, because this just happens to them. And one of the things that Chris brings to it is sort of really shooting at ground level with the characters. And they find out these things as they go along. That they interact with electricity. When the invasion happens, all power everywhere on the entire planet, they find out. It's based in Moscow, but they find out this is global. It goes out. And it's because the creatures are electrical in nature. So, and they interact with electricity. That's one of the things we've had a lot of fun with, playing with night and daylight. Timur, you want to talk about that a little?
Because the unique idea of this movie is, like in usual, if you in darkness, you're scared. But in this movie, it's opposite. If you in darkness, you're okay, because the aliens, they affect all the light bulbs, and if they are coming, you see the light. In this case, if you're in darker, then it means there is no aliens around you. And as soon as you see the light, the lamps light, then they are coming, and they are wearing bulbs. All the characters, they're wearing bulbs, and if the bulbs starts to light, then means aliens are coming. How they protect themselves, and it's unique. Like it's unique idea. It's just twist. It's opposite.
Yeah, in fact. Just to elaborate a little bit, it really takes the stand-up conventions that you've seen in alien invasion movies. It really subverts it. And you know, just what these guys are saying, it's very unique in that sense. What the motivation is for what drives the aliens, and why, you know, they want to invade, the Earth. And so I think a lot of ultimately what you're gonna see, and that's gonna come later, is just how the aliens are designed and how they interact, and the way that they attack is very different. It's very unique. And Timur and his facility are actually doing a lot of the visual effects for it.
What do the aliens look like? Well,
you're going to have to see the movie.
Yeah. It's a secret. They're invisible. 90% of the movie, they're invisible.
Oh,
You don't see them, but then.
So they're revealed near the end.
They're revealed near the end, and even then, there's some mystery about them. They throughout, they are revealed by how they interact with the environment. They, and again, this is it's a journey of discovery for the characters too, because they react very fatally with people, creatures around them, instantly killing them in a very dynamic way, which we'll show you some visuals on later. It has to do with electrical interaction. And then they come to, as Timor said, they trigger electrical responses. In like, there would be no power in here. There would be no lights on. But if an alien came through, you might see a little shimmer. You might see some sparks. They might wink in and out of a little ripple in the air, and these lights would flicker.
And all the mobile phones starts to ring, or the radio.
Yes, these would all be dead until an alien came close, and then all of a sudden, it'd pop on. That would be bad. If you heard a sound, that was an electronic sound.
Like in real life, like if somebody's calling you, that means nothing good.
So when the phone goes off in the theater, everyone's going to freeze.
That's right. Yeah.
And in theater, at the end of the show, when the light comes on,
it's bad. So, and we did a lot of research, just to ground the science into lightning effects, into to ball lightning as sort of unusual effects that have never really been explained, to help us design how the aliens interact, some of the visuals in it. There's a character, a fantastic Russian character, heroic character in the center of the movie that they come upon, who's discovered some nature of the aliens just through testing, through traditional scientific method, test and research, and he's built a Faraday cage in his apartment. Who knows what a Faraday cage is? This group should know what a Faraday cage is. It's a cage of wires that no electricity can penetrate. You can be inside a Faraday cage and someone can shoot a bolt of lightning at it and it would dissipate through the cage. So he's built one of those, and using microwave science, which is there's one explanation, there's one theory behind ball lightning that is has to do with electricity vaporizing silicone to cause it. He's worked on that. So I tried to embed that throughout, again, so the movie...
But it's very, what's interesting, it's very grounded, everything. Yeah. All the mythology is very grounded. You can understand it without special knowledges. It's about microwave... mobile phone, ball.
How much time are you guys playing with in the movie? Is it something that takes place over a few days, a few weeks, a few months?
Few months, a few weeks.
No, a few days, five or six days.
Oh, sorry. From, yeah.
It happens, the first 10 minutes of the movie are meant to be the first day. Everyone shows up in Moscow and this event happens that night. And then our characters... luckily hide in a protected environment, and we fade to black and we fade up, and it's just a few days later. I don't really say it's 2, 3, 4, it's enough time that the aliens have done their work and they emerge out of their hiding place, out of their dark hiding place into this empty city, which is a scene we're shooting today.
How violent is it every day?
Well, it'll be PG-13 is what we're aiming for, but you know, it's there's a fair amount of action in it. There's a fair amount of scenes where they fight back, where they run from, where the aliens, we see the aliens do what they do. But it's not graphic. It's not blood and guts. But it's scary.
Yeah, it's not exploitative, but you're going to see destruction.
Yeah.
So you have your, on the first night, you have your big, like, invasion sequence, which is going to be like the movie's, like, big opening statement.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe... I mean, I guess you can't spoil too much, but can you describe what that entails?
You want to talk about the bar scene?
No, it's
it's told from, again, it's told from the point of view of our characters. Our characters end up meeting, sort of happenstance, like life. And if we get it right, it's one of these things where people are going along in their life. These two young guys came to Moscow, have something happen, so they go, oh, what the heck, we're here in Moscow, let's have a good time. Moscow's a great nightlife. So they found this club they go to, they meet these two young women there, things are pretty happy. The music's playing, there's beautiful people around, and then all the lights go out. What the heck? They all wander outside, and it's dark. This entire vibrant city is just completely pitch black. They're looking, no one can start their car. Their cell phones don't work. Nothing works. It's pretty spooky. And there's this sort of shimmering light, and things are coming down to the ground. They think little sparklers. It's like if it was America, it'd be like 4th of July, and it looks beautiful. And then it's not so beautiful. And then there's devastating panic, and the aliens start to do their work, and our characters run back inside this club, and there's a big action scene, and it's told in a very sense of immediacy. Sense of you're really connected to these people and what's happening to them. And they don't know. A sense of, as if it were really, you know, well, imagine what if it happened to you. There was an attack. There was like a blitzkrieg.
Is the story self-contained in Moscow, or do we get
yes.
the world's reaction?
Well, we learn through our characters, they find some things along the way, some connections to the outside world. The point of view of the story is contained in Moscow. We learn as we go along that it's not just Moscow this happened to.
It's not unusual to have a film like this led by such a young cast. And you've got, it's quite an eclectic cast. So you've got Americans, you've got a Swede, I think, an Australian. And they all come from different schools of thought, as far as actors as well. What sort of thought went into the casting, and what were you trying to get out of these characters?
Again, grounded, real, relatable cast characters who were good actors, and I think we attracted, and I think that's a testament to the script. Had a really good script that, again, we think is hopefully original in these kinds of stories, that was dramatically credible, and really wanted to get relatable people that felt like, you know, this age group, you know, the you and me of this age group. And Emil Hirsch from the very beginning was interested in this script and the ability to play in, you know, quote, a studio commercial movie, but something real character. But you find out with a lot of actors this age, even the serious ones who do independent movies, they like these kinds of movies if they're real. They like this experience, this of being in it. So that's what we really went for, and we're really thrilled with our cast. Just a testament to Chris and the script.
I'm also curious, obviously you're filming at very famous Russian locations. It's obviously stuff that has not been done time and time again in Russia, probably because of the government sanctions or government not wanting certain projects. Could you talk about the complexities or the logistics of getting the rights to film at these locations?
The government doesn't care what we're shooting here. We're just destroying the whole Moscow, whole city, in the movie, and nobody asked us what. They don't care. They like that we're producing a movie here. They like that something happening, and the Russian filmmakers can be involved and produce something for the rest of the world. And we have some sponsors, some supporters on different levels. But it's just ordinary production. There's nothing special in it in Russia.
Well, is it? Do you, when you're filming at something like Red Square or some of these really famous locations,
yeah.
do they, is it very
just
much
pay,
for...
Just pay them. Just pay the city, take a permit, get permission, be polite, don't destroy, and that's it. It's quite the same as everywhere.
We've actually been amazed. I mean, it's hard to shoot at these locations. There's a lot of rules, like Red Square, but if you obey the rules, and you pay the permits, and you hire the cops, and as Americans, we were out there shooting on Red Square, and they allowed us for certain periods of time to, like, put up barricades and close off different angles. So, like, there's the entire, you know, one quarter of Red Square in the middle, like, on Sunday morning, empty for us. And they were thrilled. I mean, it's business. I mean, they love the fact that we came here. And this is actually the first time.
It's first time, yeah.
First time that an American movie has shot here in its entirety with, as you've heard, with really a Moscow-based crew. Yes, there's Americans here, but it's a Moscow, it's a Russian-American production in terms of the production of the movie. Other movies have come here. But
six days, and then...
International movies that are already set up, and they bring their crew here, and they shoot a location. This is the first time that an American studio movie has based entirely in Moscow and shot the whole movie here.
I'm sorry.
And it's not easy to... I mean, your question is very very specific, and it's not easy to shoot here because the city is very busy, very intense. And like, for example, if you want to shoot on Red Square, you have to shut down the Red Square. It's like 100,000 people like during the weekend, and you have to shut down, you have to control. It's not easy to do. The same as the shooting day we had in the Lenin's library, because it's a road where the government cars, because it's very like a Russia, it's very centric city, and like how is it centric? Yeah, when everything happening from one.
It's all in the center.
All in the center. No. It's a the country works as a. There's a center and everything under control, like what's called the centric, like
yeah, the Kremlin.
Kremlin is the center of the control the country, and there's all the bureaucrats are there in this small ensemble, and they have to drive back and forth during the day, and if you want to shoot there, you have to deal with them because they need a like. They think about the security, and you cannot put like 100 cars on their way. But somehow it's happened. We made it.
It took a lot of planning. You asked about planning. For instance, this one location, Lenin Library, is this beautiful state library, very highly regulated, huge plaza with a statue of Dostoevsky in the front of it, and we wanted to shoot a scene there with our Russian characters, they're soldiers, Russian soldiers. That's their encampment. That's their base. And they told us there's one Sunday a month, the last Sunday of every month. The library's closed on Sunday, and the last Sunday of every month, Monday's closed also because they use it for repairs. So they said, you can shoot the last Sunday. So we only had so many Sundays in the schedule. So we had to plan really far in advance. And when we shot there, We had to go in at midnight the night before and dress it, make it look like an army camp. And for the Russian cast, this is a scene with the combined Russian-American cast, the scene has a sort of hush to it, because the Russians, as we were shooting it, they couldn't believe we were in there. It was sort of an amazing day on the set, because they were sort of in awe. It's like, I don't know, shooting like in the Capitol Rotunda or something in Washington. It's this amazing location, and they were sort of, wow. And probably because of we're trying to capture some scale to the movie. I don't think it's common for local movies to do that.
Seems like the film is actually going to be quite a good advert for the tourist board. I mean, it seems like you're really kind of showing off this city as a place that is, I guess, kind of worth destroying in a way.
Yeah. Come see Moscow. Yeah. Worth
before,
destroying.
Before. We will destroy it.
I'm curious, how many days is the production schedule, and how much did 3D add to that production schedule, do you think?
I think
20%?
Yeah, to the shooting schedule. The movie's right around 58 days now. It was always a tight schedule. We always wanted to make it in this sort of intense sense of immediacy. And I think we added 8 or 9 days for 3D, which is sort
that's,
of what...
That's not so much.
Not so much.
Unfortunately.
That's all they gave us.
Well, a lot of filmmakers I've spoken with 3D say that you have a lot of long, steady shots and not a lot of cutting because too much, it's jarring. Does that sort of help the production schedule because your shots are going to be longer? You're not doing, or
it's much more, to make shots longer, you need more time to prep because if you have to combine in one shot, if somebody's close up, then the establishing shot, then you have to, like master shot. You have to, you have a lot of events in any case, yeah, during the shot, and to combine it to be sure that everything works perfect, all the reactions and in the right place. It takes time to prep these long shots. It's why I think it doesn't help. You know, this technique doesn't help to make it faster, because when you're cutting, it's easy because you can shoot moments and then later you will create you'll tell the story. But if you're trying to combine all the reactions, all the events in one shot, then you need more time to prep, to rehearse, and sometimes everything's good, but there is somebody appears behind the door. you have to stop, say, okay, let's try again. It's more complicated. It's easy for James Cameron because everything was virtual, and it was easy to do long, beautiful shots. But in our way, it's much more complicated.
And I think the technology and the sort of visual psychology of 3D and editing and style is still evolving. And I think it's a truism that you can't be as cutty. But some of that has to do with the angles that you cut between also, and has to do with the eye readjusting. And you know, we're trying to evolve our own style too. We're trying to make a movie that actually hasn't been made before in 3D. It's that has a sense of immediacy, that's grounded, that has a sense of urgency to it.
Especially because the our movie is more. It's more like suspense. Yeah, it's very suspensey. It's about suspense, like because you don't see aliens and they are maybe next to you and you don't know. And this and 3D for suspense movies is very, very effective. Is what I learned from this movie.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's 2D movies. It's more like narration, like director telling you the story. But in 3D movies, it's he's director inviting you in his world, and you're like a traveler. And in this case, 3D, it's very interesting. We learned a lot. I learned a lot because it's the first time I never made 3D movies. And I learned like the difference between 2D and 3D. 2D, the audience has to be more creative because you see only these like shadows, colorful shadows on the white screen. And in your mind, you have to create the world. You are have to imagine the world by seeing 3D world, by seeing these images. But with 3D movies, with the glasses, you don't have to imagine. You're already there. And it's kind of corrupting audience imagination because you don't have to imagine. You're already there. It's very different. We didn't understand yet what does it mean 3D. For us and how it will change everything. It's the same thing what's happened in, I don't know when, 16th century when the painters created perspective. Yeah, yeah. Before that it was just more ornamental and symbols, and then they created the illusion of the real world and becomes big deal. It just changed everything.
Do you have to consider what it's going to look like in 2D though? Because if you approach the film differently for 3D, you have to consider the fact that presumably that you know it's eventually going to come out on DVD and on, it's going to be on TV, and that's how a lot of people are going to see the film. Does that lessen the impact then if the shots have been constructed in such a way, you know, in a different way that you wouldn't have constructed?
Theoretically, it's a big problem because 2D is a very different, very different rhythm, very different composition. But when I saw Avatar in 2D, I liked even more than in 3D. I don't know. I don't think it's so important. If there is a story, if there is a character, and a rhythm, then it doesn't really matter. You can enjoy moving.
But obviously,
3D.
If you have this stuff flying at the camera, it looks kind of funny on a small screen as opposed to big screen.
We don't have a lot. We're not doing this.
It's not gimmicky like that. I mean, there'll be some effects. You'll use it judiciously, so there'll be like one moment because of the nature of the visual effects in the movie. But, you know, as I said, it's meant to be grounded and real and suspenseful. And most of the 3D movies that have been done to date are fantastical in nature, certainly the family movies, the animated movies. The Avatar is a fantastical, even though the emotion of Avatar works great, it's in a fantastical world. Ours is not. Ours is grounded in a real world. It's not a comic book movie. It's not a superhero movie. It's so we think that has a unique quality to it.
Speaking of the fantastic, you've certainly been drawn to science fiction, sort of these bigger than life stories. Can you talk a little about that?
What
means to you about science fiction as a genre?
I don't know. I don't know what to say. It's great. If you have a relatable story, then the science fiction will just the genre will help you to tell the story more entertaining, more like more saturated, more emotional. just tool, how to tell the human story, and nothing else. I'm not a big fan of. I wasn't a big fan of genre movies before Nightwatch, and then just suddenly I found that the genre helps you to tell the human story, relatable story, very impressive and very emotional. It's like unusual. Every nightmare. It's just metaphor for the nightmares we have in the real world.
Would you call yourself a genre filmmaker now, though? If you know, is that you said you hadn't really considered it before Nightwatch. I wonder whether you sort of see yourself as a genre filmmaker now.
I don't know what it means to be like genre. It's very difficult to describe what it means genre or filmmaker.
Right, right.
We are, like, every movie has a genre. I don't know a movie without genre.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, are you following a model of science fiction who can create panic, strange feelings inside people, so different maybe from the new genre and more ironic, like District 9, for example, more satirical? You prefer this way?
Or I prefer,
you consider also the other?
I prefer the most impressive movie I seen for the last few years. It was Gareth Edwards' movie called Monsters. It's a great example of the mix between genre movies and melodrama. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's very good, new, and surprising.
Didn't you just get attached to something? Didn't you just put yourself with Gareth on something?
Yeah. I hope we will make his next movie together.
What's that about?
He will tell you.
You keep kind of emphasizing that it's very grounded and everything in reality, but are there any real over-the-top action sequences that we can expect that aren't necessary? You're going to be like, whoa. Like, I mean, is it all super grounded, or is there going to be anything like
it's
that?
An action movie. I mean, it's right. An action thriller, and I guess what we mean by grounded is from an emotional point of view, from a sort of character point of view. That you want to believe these characters are really going through it like an audience member would go through it. But it's a ride. I mean, there's from the opening action sequence to... It's a combination of action and suspense. So even the scenes like the scene on Red Square, which is this vast, empty scene of these characters working at this police car when all of a sudden they hear a sound. And it's like, oh my God, here's this... And it's broad daylight, the middle of the day. And they've now sort of figured out a little something, these aliens here. Maybe invisible, maybe they're there, maybe they're not, and what follows is this incredibly intense scene with great scale. And then they end up in the middle of the movie meeting up with these Russian soldiers who come to their rescue after an action sequence and eventually learn how to fight back, take the fight too. So,
yeah, there are multiple set sequences, and you know, I think... to Tom's point earlier, the invasion happens in the first 10 minutes, and it's pretty unrelenting, I would say.
I don't know how much you can say without spoiling, but are the aliens invading because they want something, or is it just because there's more technology now and just noticing them more now?
There's a reason. They want something. It's pretty simple. I mean...
Well, it seems to me that a lot of aliens are coming to this planet for water. Seems to be a very
girls.
Water and girls. But water seems to be a big thing with a lot of stuff. So is water a big part of this?
No.
Okay.
There's water in the movie.
No, I just...
That's not why they're here.
Oh, okay. No, because there's other alien projects right now going on that a lot of people are interested in.
What are they doing down there?
What is that?
Fish.
But Steve, it does have to do with
Oh, that's the salted...
Yeah.
Wow, this is quite... That's not... We haven't even had the main course yet.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Okay, so this story is set in a foreign country. I mean, coming here from the airport, my driver couldn't speak a word of English to me. How does that play in the movie with communication? Like, are there subtitles? Or like, how do people communicate?
It's what's great. The uniqueness of this project, because you have a problem to communicate with each other, until we have a bigger problem. Then if we have aliens, then we'll figure out how to explain each other where to run and how to survive.
There's a lot of alien invasion movies on the horizon next year, even later this year.
Something's coming, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know why. Skyline and
it's like is this in your mind at all? Do you worry about these? Do you worry about doing something?
About aliens or?
More importantly, the other films.
No, about
aliens.
Do you
worry that you're competing against them? Do you want to try and, you know, research them so you're doing something different, or are they not in your head at all?
I know we cannot think about it. We could just have to make a movie, make it good, emotional, impressive, and then we will see. It's how you can build a strategy when like 600 people producing movies at the same time in different cities all around the world. If you will try to plan and manipulate, then you will be stuck like a what's called serpenter. What's the insect with the 40 legs?
Centipede,
like a centipede. You cannot move because you have, if centipede will start to think how to move with your leg.
I think our movie is very unique and it's its own movie. And our job is to be competitive with ourselves, to make the best movie. You know, the effects, the action, the characters, the drama, the visual effects. Which we've been pretty good about.
I just want to point out, I thought this was lunch.
Okay, it's become lunch becoming. Yeah, it's a lunch. Then dinner and all that stuff. You know, it's a Stalin's building. Stalin.
Yeah.
Amazing building.
Well, obviously, here's a completely non-movie question. Are you, for people who've never been to Moscow, are there certain places, like little off the beaten path, that you would recommend people to go see?
Like journalists?
Yeah, like online reporters that were here for 2 days?
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me think. I will.
Okay. I'm just throwing that out there.
Tony is saying that since you have to leave pretty soon, they say, that maybe we should wander upstairs to while they serve
the
for 5 or 10 minutes.
Access to go up to the rooftop.
And we can look around and sort of point out, teamwork can point out some of the shooting locations and.
Let's do it.
Then we'll come back down.
One second, let me figure out.